He was the man, said Grant, the most to be envied. Well, he didn't look like that anymore in 1861. He weighed about 350 pounds. He had to literally be winched up into the air. His poor horse would be led underneath him. Scott would be eased down onto his horse. And then he would ride, I hope not very far, for the animal's sake, and then would be lifted off, and then he would do his job. But that somewhat decrepit physical appearance, he suffered from dropsy, among many other ailments. That physical picture of Scott should not obscure the fact that his mind still worked extremely well. And what Winfield Scott did in April and early May of 1861 was apply his powerful intellect to the problem of how to defeat the Confederacy, and he came up with a long-range plan to win the war that, in effect, anticipated almost exactly how the war would be fought. And this is what Scott said the North needed to do. He envisioned first a powerful move down the Mississippi River. He wanted to gain control of the river, divide the Confederacy into two pieces. He envisioned doing this by having a naval flotilla work together with army forces on the Mississippi River and have them move down, supporting one another, taking one position after another, if the Confederates chose to resist, until finally the Mississippi would be in Union control and the Confederacy would be divided. At the same time that this movement down the Mississippi was taking place, Scott called for a blockade of the Confederate coastline. He wanted to seal the Confederate coast, deny the Confederacy war material that they would need to import from abroad, and prevent the Confederacy from shipping its goods, especially its cotton, out to foreign markets and getting the money that that cotton would yield that the Confederacy could then apply to its war effort. So strike down the Mississippi, divide the Confederacy, seal off the coastline. These elements of the plan, because they called for constricting the Confederacy, came to be called the Anaconda Plan. That's what the Northern newspapers called it. The plans were printed in all the Northern newspapers. The Confederates read them too. As Scott was formulating his strategy, the Confederates were reading about it in the newspapers. They knew what the North might be doing, but it didn't really matter. The proof would come in the execution. Scott had one more element to his plan. If striking down the river and sealing the coast was not enough to defeat the Confederacy, he said it would take a major invasion into the heartland of the Confederacy to finish off the South. He thought that invasion might take 2 to 3 years and as many as 300,000 men. So he's thinking on a very broad scale. Most people at the time were not. Scott understands that it's going to be a long war and that it might take hundreds of thousands of men. Remember, this at a time when the United States Army is about 15,000 strong. So Scott understands the magnitude of the task ahead of the North, and his Anaconda plan shows that. Now, except by underestimating by about half how many men it would actually take in the end, it took many more hundreds of thousands, and how many years it would take, Scott had formulated a plan that anticipated pretty much how the war would be played out. Scott understood that time was going to be a necessary ingredient. It was going to take a long time to bring all these volunteers into the Army, to train them, to prepare the fleets, to get everything ready to move down the Mississippi River. And he worried that Northern public opinion would not tolerate too much time going by. He understood how public opinion worked. The citizens behind the lines in the North, once the Confederate capital had been moved to Richmond, looked at the map and said, well, it's only 100 miles away from Washington. Why don't we just go take it? If we take Richmond, we'll end the war. And a drumbeat began behind the lines in the North of, let's move against Richmond, let's move on to Richmond, get our forces in the field, take the Confederate capital, let's end this war. Scott told Lincoln, and other military figures did as well, it's going to take longer than that. We can't rush our troops into the field. We have to take our time and build real armies. Scott's greatest worry was that political considerations, pressure from the civilian sector, would force the Lincoln government to move before the military was really in a good position to move. But we have this call for an On to Richmond campaign that really would remain for the rest of the war. Much of the North would, throughout the war, look at that little piece of ground between Virginia and Washington, and just think that our forces should be able to move down and take the rebel capital, and there would be constant pressure for the United States government to do that. It began a preoccupation on the part of the northern people with Virginia and Richmond and the Eastern Theater that would continue for the rest of the war.